Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington, working on this program via remote. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan and Sudan this Tuesday, February 15, 2022. Sudan's deputy military leader is in Juba to check on the progress in the implementation of the 2018 Revitalized Peace Agreement.
To oversee the outstanding issues and updates on the peace implementations that include the graduations of the unified forces and implementation of other chapters in the agreement, we came here so that we can sit down with signatories to the peace deal.
And the European Union ambassador to South Sudan says the transitional government of national unity should implement financial management, transparency, and accountability.
Some people have been disappointed. Some people have seen that the money they have put in this country didn't bring the expected results, of course. And then you never have to forget one thing, is that in our countries, there is the public opinion.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The deputy chairperson of Sudan's Sovereign Council says he is in Juba to check on the progress of South Sudan's revitalized peace agreement. The military leader says he will meet with signatories to the South Sudan's peace deal to look at the obstacles hindering the graduation of unified forces. Viola Elias has more for VOA from Juba.
Speaking to journalists upon his arrival at Juba International Airport, Muhammad Hamdan Dagalo outlined the purpose of his visit to Juba.
To oversee the outstanding issues and updates on the peace implementations that include the graduations of the unified forces and implementation of other chapters in the agreement, we came here so that we can sit down with signatories to the peace deal and we hope for successful meetings.
Hamdan says he is pleased with the ongoing progress being made in improving the security situation in South Sudan, especially in Juba. Hamdan noted there are always challenges in the implementation of every agreement, but says it takes political will for the 2018 peace deal to be a success.
When there is political will, persistence, and goodwill from both parties, then the agreement will be fully implemented. For us, our first priority is the graduation of the unified forces and the other outstanding issues which haven't been implemented.
Tut Galwak, chairperson of the National Transitional Committee, says the unity government has tackled many issues in the agreement, but admits certain security arrangements such as graduation of unified forces have yet to be implemented. Galwak says the government is ready to hold meetings with its peace partners so that a solution can be reached on fully implementing the security arrangement.
We are ready for all that will complete the security arrangements and its implementation. Then we will graduate forces starting from the first batch to the second batch.
Last week, at the end of their ninth visit to South Sudan, members of the United Nations Commission on Human Rights in South Sudan said, although there is consensus among stakeholders that some progress has been made in implementing the peace deal, critical elements including security sectors, reforms, constitution and electoral reforms and transitional justice have yet to be addressed. The Commission said a lack of progress in those key provisions as well as an agreement on command structures contributes to persistent insecurity and impunity when human rights violations occur. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
Authorities in Unity State and the Roeng administrative area say 9 people suspected of being involved in fighting over the weekend were detained. The security advisor in Unity State says 13 people from the Roeng administrative area and 6 from Unity State died during cattle raid attacks. Deng Gai Deng reports for VOA from Bor.
Unity State Security Advisor Stephen Salam says the fighting started when a person from Ruweng who was suspected of planning to steal cattle was killed by cattle keepers from Gwit County of Unity State who had gone to look for pasture in the Ruweng administrative area on Saturday. Salam says on orders of Unity State Governor Joseph Mwenchwil, authorities promptly tracked down and arrested the murder suspects, but armed young men from Ruweng retaliated anyway, killing six people from Gwit County.
And Commissioner, even the Minister of Information, Acting Minister of Information, Unity State, went there. Security advisor of administration, Ruweng administrative area, went there, and then they sit and they arrest the people. They end them to national security to put them under arrest. The governor direct the commissioner, you will sit and compensate the person that was killed with youth. And then we agree on that. From there, the youth of Ruweng mobilized themselves. They came and attacked. The youth mobilized, defend themselves, and they chase away the Ruweng youth.
Salam says authorities have condemned their violence and loss of lives. He says security agents have been ordered to apprehend all suspects involved in their fighting.
We told youth don't take any step again against administrative area, Ruweng youth. Don't make that again. We told them, and I talked with the security advisor of Ruweng administrative area. You talk to the youth of Ruweng, and I will talk to the youth of Unity State. Up to now, we come up with a decision. From Niel, the cattle head in Niel, they will withdraw back. They should come back.
Malwale Chong, security advisor in the Ruweng administrative area, says 13 people were killed in his area by gunmen from Unity State. Chong says security in Ruweng have also arrested two people suspected of taking part in the weekend violence.
There were some young men who went to steal cattle, and two of them were killed. In the evening, some new youth came to the village and killed a big person. So the youth of Pariang went in for retaliation. So that is what brought the problem. The government said, no, you should not do that. And myself went to the area and arrested two people. Now they are in the National Security Detention Facility.
Intercommunal violence has been on rise in South Sudan in recent months. Last week, authorities in the Abyei administrative area said 21 people were killed and several others were injured after armed men, believed to have come from the neighboring Twi County of northern Baharel Ghazal State, attacked a net market of Abyei. According to the UN mission in South Sudan, revenge attacks and cattle-related killings remain the biggest insecurity challenges after political violence subsided in the country following the signing of the revitalized peace agreement in 2018. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaideng in Bor.
The European Union is calling on the South Sudan government to do more to fix what it calls a trust deficit between the country and its donors. The European Union ambassador to South Sudan says while the EU wants to offer more to Juba, the unity government needs to implement reforms. For VOA News, Wake, Simon Wood reports from Juba.
Speaking at a news conference in Juba on Monday afternoon, Christian Beder said the European Union is changing the context of its relations with African countries, which would open up more opportunities in areas of investment, security support, and development, among others. Beida says while South Sudan is one of the EU's partner countries, mistrust exists. He says the South Sudan government should implement several reforms laid out in the 2018 peace deal, particularly in the areas of financial reforms and freedom of speech, noting that the money South Sudan receives is coming from hard-working taxpayers.
Some people have been disappointed. Some people have seen that the money they have put in this country didn't bring the expected results, of course. And then you never have to forget one thing, is that in our countries, there is the public opinion. You know, the money we can put in a country, and this is, I feel very comfortable to say this, and I say it to the people in government, is not coming from some rich people in Europe. No. It's coming from taxpayers. Taxpayers struggling. Less than you, but still struggling.
Beida also notes that there is donor fatigue. Speaking at the same event, French ambassador to South Sudan, Mark Troyt, said there is a need to rebuild the broken trust between South Sudan and many of its donor countries.
For that, what do we need? Basically, two things, very simple, so to speak. One is trust in the financial mechanism. That's why the PFM reform, the public finance management reform, is so essential. We need transparency and we need accountability.
Beida says the European Union is willing to fund several programs in South Sudan, but in order for that to happen, the EU wants to see finance management reforms and freedom of speech for South Sudanese citizens.
I know that it's not easy to open it completely in a country where there is violence and war, but we cannot see this thing shrinking every day and journalists being detained and threatened. This is something we don't like to do. And I'm talking constantly, and Mark is doing the same, to the people of this country to say you cannot treat the journalists like that. If a journalist has committed a crime, so fine, you accuse him, he goes to court, you cannot arrest him, and then he disappears for 20 days, you don't even know where it is. This is not acceptable for us.
The South Sudan peace deal requires the unity government to implement reforms in the security and economic sectors, as well as other areas. Chapter 4 of the deal mandates that the government implement institutional reforms in key financial sectors, such as the Central Bank, Ministry of Finance, and the Anti-Corruption Commission, among others. With only 12 months to go before the end of the transitional period, some lawmakers say bills for amending some of the laws in order to institute reforms have yet to be brought to Parliament for deliberations. Cabinet Affairs Minister Martin Elia Lomro acknowledges parties to the peace deal took a long time to establish some government structures. Lomro says several reform bills, such as Constitutional Bill, Security Sector Reform Bill, and Elections Bill, were passed by the Cabinet and are waiting to be ratified by Parliament. Lomro cited a lack of finances and an arms embargo on South Sudan as challenges that he says are slowing the implementation of the reforms. He says the international community needs to understand the economic context under which South Sudan is operating since gaining independence.
And as we were struggling to stabilize, we had a serious drop in oil price. We all know that, right? And then we went into the Panthou conflict, right? The Panthou war between us and the North, and we decided to close down the oil completely, which means whatever we had, we were using it. We don't have any other income. People don't remember these things. And then, of course, before we can recover, we had the conflict of 2013, which destroyed oil fields, as you all know. And even the drop, the small drop of oil that we were getting, the price also went down.
Beida and Troyt spoke to reporters in Juba ahead of the EU-Africa summit that is scheduled to take place Thursday and Friday in Brussels. Beida says the summit aims to forge and strengthen partnership and ties between the EU and Africa in the areas of solidarity, security, peace and prosperity. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, we look at the effects of climate change. Find out more after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
where do you get your health advice from?
Sometimes I get my health advice from my grandmother, who is at home. When I'm sick that I can't control myself, she'll help.
I get my health advice from my friend, colleague, who live together. Well, those who know about, those who have been experienced more problems about health, they don't advise me through phone. We talk, we chat, discuss everything.
My dad, because my dad is a doctor.
I'd say I get my health advice from various places, the internet, my parents, because I have, my mother is a nurse.
My health advice, I get it on the internet. If I need something on how to deal with obesity, I get it on the internet. Anything I need pertaining to health advice is on the internet.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. And in our Tuesday Health segment, we take a closer look at the effects of climate change. The Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, or IPCC, has begun a two-week meeting to consider a report on the impact of the world's changing climate and how humans might adapt. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Hundreds of scientists meeting virtually will lay out the latest evidence on how past and future changes to the Earth's climate system are affecting the planet. The report under review is the second of three installments that will comprise the IPCC's sixth assessment report, which will be released later this year. In August, the scientific body approved the first contribution of Working Group 1, which dealt with the physical science basis of climate change. The second part, currently under review, highlights the role of social justice and diverse forms of knowledge, such as indigenous and local knowledge, might play to strengthen climate change action and reduce the risks. The chair of the IPCC, Ho-Sung Lee, says the report focuses on solutions and productive areas for action.
It will be more strongly integrate the natural, social, and economic sciences. And it will provide policymakers with sound data and knowledge to help them shape policies and make decisions. The need for the Working Group 2 report has never been greater because the stakes have never been higher.
The United Nations-backed IPCC was established in 1988 to provide political leaders with periodic scientific assessments regarding climate change. The panel previously issued five assessment reports that spotlighted climate change as an issue of growing global importance. The Paris Agreement on Climate Change calls for limiting human-induced global warming to well below 2 degrees Celsius, preferably 1.5 degrees Celsius, above pre-industrial levels. The IPCC warns that mark will be exceeded this century unless drastic action is taken. Secretary General of the World Meteorological Organization, Petteri Talas, says weather-related disasters have been increasing dramatically over the past two decades. He says vulnerable areas in tropical latitudes, especially in Africa, Southern Asia, and the Pacific, are suffering the worst impacts of climate-driven disasters. He says he often uses a sports analogy to communicate the seriousness of climate change to humanity.
We have at the moment the Winter Olympics going on in China. We have high-performing athletes, and if you give them doping, then they perform even more effectively. So that's what we have done to the atmosphere. We have been doping the atmosphere.
The contribution by Working Group 3 dealing with the mitigation of climate change will be finalized in April. The concluding synthesis of IPCC's sixth assessment report will be made in September. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
From Geneva, we move to South Africa, where the controversial South African politician Julian Malema is back in court this week, accused of inciting hatred against white farmers. The AfriForum NGO says the leader of the country's third biggest political party, the Economic Freedom Fighters, continues to sing a song calling for white farmers to be shot dead. Malema was found guilty in 2010 of hate speech for singing the song when he was president of the African National Congress Youth League. Darren Taylor has more from Johannesburg.
Kiss the poor, the farmer, shoot to kill.
Since his conviction and fine 11 years ago, Malema has changed the lyrics of the song from Kill the Farmer to Kiss the Farmer. But he continues to sing Shoot to Kill, gesturing as if he's holding a firearm. AfriForum says the song advocates hatred on the grounds of race and ethnicity and is an incitement to cause harm. The group's policy head, Ernst Rutz, has told the Equality Court that racial hatred, partly inspired by songs like Kiss the Farmer, is evident in the torture involved in a lot of farm attacks.
The most common forms of physical torture that occur during the commitment of the farm attack include beatings, stabbings, burning victims with boiling water, molten plastic, and hot clothes irons. Some farmers are even slaughtered like animals or dragged behind their own vehicles. They are tied to the vehicle with a rope and then dragged for vast distances.
According to former police colonel Johan Berger, now a crime expert at the Institute for Security Studies, 1,242 white farmers were murdered between 1990 and 2020. AfriForum says a conservative estimate of white farmers killed since South Africa became a democracy in 1994 is 4,000, with many more thousands, including their wives and children, brutalized. The government maintains farm attacks are part of a broader crime crisis and are not racially motivated. Rutz testified this is contradicted by many perpetrators who've been found guilty of killings on farms.
When Knowledge Polis Mandlazi was charged for committing 5 farm murders, he responded in court that he had murdered these people because he wanted their money. He added that, and I quote, "My hate for white people made me do it." And he said that he regarded murdering white people as merely going to work.
The police say robbery is the main motive behind almost 90% of farm attacks. Rutz agrees that stealing may indeed be the primary motive, but he told the court it isn't the only driver.
So if you simply go there to steal, why do you spend hours, several hours on a farm? There's even been cases of perpetrators taking a break from the torturing to eat lunch and then go back to the torture. Oftentimes they can steal because there's nobody at the house, but then they wait for the people to come back and then they ambush them when they arrive at the house and they murder them.
Malema says he's got nothing to do with farm murders. He says more black people are killed in South Africa in a single day than the number of white farmers murdered during an entire year. In an affidavit before court, the EFF leader says it's ridiculous that a song called Kiss the Farmer can be considered incitement to harm anyone. He says his song is merely encouraging black citizens to fight legitimately for land that's rightfully theirs. Malema has said on national TV that most of the country's wealth and land still belong to whites and that they should learn to share. If they don't, he said, there'd be trouble, but that the time wasn't right for them to be attacked yet.
I wouldn't know what will happen in the future, but I'm saying let there be a peaceful transfer of land without any drop of blood. I don't want to see any drop of blood. And white people are more than safe under Julius Malema, under the EFF. Racists are not safe. The white supremacists are not safe.
Malema remains in full voice. That could change sometime next week when the court ruling's expected to be given. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Still in southern Africa, parts of Malawi are still recovering from January's tropical storm Anna, which left scores dead across Madagascar, Malawi, Mozambique, and Zimbabwe. UN agencies in Malawi have been providing to help displaced people in camps, but those affected say thousands more need shelter, food, and clean water. Lamek Masena reports from Malawi.
Hannah Gift fled her home to the Bangula evacuation camp in late January after floods from Tropical Storm Anna washed away all her property and livestock. But the single mother of four says the situation in the camp is awful. She says life in the camp is unbearable. We are only given 1 cup of maize flour per family, she says, adding that they sometimes go to sleep without eating. Flood victim Selenie Gazrina says there is no way to earn money. She says they have nowhere to go to earn money or buy their own food. All the gardens here have been washed away, she says, so no one can offer us work in their gardens. Gasoline and gift are among nearly 1 million Malawians affected by floods in more than half of the country's 28 districts. 33 people were killed in the floods. UN agencies in Malawi and donors have started providing aid to victims, but say additional funds are needed. Rudolf Schwenk is acting UN resident coordinator in Malawi and also the UNICEF country representative.
Well, as UNICEF, we had mobilized around $500,000, so $500,000 already pre-positioned and procured supplies, because obviously we had planned for disasters, so we were able to utilize that. Of course, we are mobilizing additional funds from existing resources, but we're also trying to raise funds with donors now, highlighting the importance of bringing help to the families in need here in Malawi.
Malawi lost a third of its electric generating capacity when the storm damaged a hydropower station. Environmental experts blame climate change, deforestation, and soil degradation for making the floods worse. Paul Turnbull is the country representative for the World Food Programme in Malawi.
Now that there's been so much of the forest cover has been taken away, the only solution really is to go and rehabilitate those hillsides. So we call it watershed management, and there are very, very clear techniques to make sure that the damage that happens when you've got very heavy rainfall is reduced. You dig trenches, you plant trees, you terrace the land, you use the right crops at the right time.
Meanwhile, Malawi's weather experts warn more flooding is possible in the northern and central parts of the country as heavy rain is expected over the weekend. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Nsanje, Malawi.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linor Mudu. The World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say we all can help fight the coronavirus pandemic by wearing face masks that cover our mouths and noses when we are in crowded areas. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest news on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
That's all we prepared for you this Tuesday. We now end this show with Emerson and the song Tutu Party. We've been listening to Emerson and the song Tutu Party. I'm John Tanza in Washington, celebrating some of my success stories here. thanks for taking time to be with us this evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there's no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Deserves a body, every man deserves a lady. Come to the party, oh no. Come jam, shake your body. Come show me, say you savvy. If you really ready, oh no. Before you even.